This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to What Culture Gaming. I am your host for the day, Josh Brown, joined by the lovely, as always, Rachel Shackleton Benjamin Richardson. I wanted to throw you off there. I wanted to keep you keep it up in the air. It was your birthday yesterday, Ben. Have you been enjoying yourself?
I did, thank you. I got a little sunburned, which is good. Explains why I'm wearing a shirt
like
with a lobster on it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You guys listening at home and not watching will not appreciate the splendor of this lobster T-shirt.
I bought it from Asda's George department. It cost me £5.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, as a plug there. Not paid for, just a
please.
Imagine being sponsored by Asda. That'd be pretty good, like.
Guys, we're 30 seconds into this podcast. It's already been derailed. Please wish Benji a happy birthday down in the comments, because today we are talking about indie games. Because I'm not sure if you guys saw over the weekend, the Wall Street Journal did an article on what Sony are planning to do with the PlayStation 5. And if you like indie games, it doesn't sound great. Because essentially, their limited resources, it says in the article, are being put into further strengthening relationships with their big third-party publishers, like your EA, your Activisions, and stuff like that. Because over the past few years, essentially, they've made a name for themselves as being this sort of console where you go to get the big, expensive, blockbuster, high-quality, exclusive AAA games. They've done really well with the likes of Spider-Man, God of War, The Last of Us, because not only are these games really good and critical darling, they've sold, like, hotcakes, or apparently they are furthering those relationships.
Yeah, and crucially, they're not available on rival consoles.
Exactly, yeah. So they're driving traffic to their console. But it's sort of strange that they're doing this in an era where other console makers like Nintendo and Microsoft are being far more open with their partnerships and looking to the indie space, because we've said on podcasts before, the indie space is kind of like the future of gaming. That's where the most innovative titles are coming out, and they're the most creatively satisfying.
I don't necessarily think it's the future of the gaming industry, like the business of gaming, but definitely the creative side of gaming.
Definitely, definitely.
But it's disappointing that Sony appear to be abandoning that.
Well, that's it.
Especially since the PSN and the PlayStation Store for so long has supported so many good independent games.
Well,
and it's a crucial part of the PlayStation's Game Pass equivalent.
PS9?
PS Now, thank you.
Yeah.
And is that still good?
It is still good.
They're doubling down on it, Rich, so I hope you enjoy it.
I think this strikes me, and from what I hear, it's a response to Microsoft unveiling the new hardware.
Yeah.
Basically, we want to try and hoover up as many third-party developers as quickly as possible. I don't know if it necessarily means they'll be abandoning independent games in the long term, but it certainly that seems to be what it sounds like from what you're saying.
Well, I think we've seen it over the generations so far. When Sony first announced the PlayStation 4, they came out, their big showcase was how good of a platform it was going to be for indie developers and indie studios. And although that hasn't really gone away, they focused on it much less than the other, like the competition and stuff. I have a quote from the Wall Street Journal article which says, some executives at smaller game makers say they have felt snubbed by Sony in contrast to Nintendo. Apparently at the Tokyo Game Show in the upcoming September, Nintendo is supporting events to showcase independent game developers. Sony used to do the same, but isn't planning to this year. So we're not only seeing like a sort of concerted move away from that space in like the marketing stuff, but sort of even like behind the scenes at these game shows where you're supposed to come out and show your support for, you know, the relationships you want to strengthen going forward, and they're just kind of not bothering with it.
Yeah, I feel like Sony aren't being much of a team player this year at all, are they?
They're becoming quite insular. Yeah. I mean, the skipped E3, and as you say, they're not bothering with independent games at the Tokyo Game Show. It's almost as if they're trying to define themselves as a completely separate brand and product to Microsoft and the rest of the game industry in general.
It's not a bad move, actually. Microsoft, I don't know if you guys follow the... it's like game preview. What are they called? Microsoft.
I think that's what it just is, isn't it?
Is it
Xbox
game preview?
Like games preview or something like that?
Yeah, and they throw a lot of support into indie games, and they let you sort of try an hour of them early, and they sort of put them on their store in like this kind of highlighted place. I can't remember the name of it. It's like game preview, game something like that. You guys all know. But yeah, so that is the big difference between Sony and Microsoft. Like, historically, I mean, that was like a couple of years ago I got obsessed with the game preview kind of style of things. And now Sony are taking this kind of step. It's not a bad move because the guys have got to kind of like be different.
Especially, I think, this generation more than ever.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been any real difference between Xbox and PlayStation other than the exclusives that you mentioned. But for the most part, the two consoles are virtually indistinguishable.
Well, that's a great point. We've talked about this before, Rich, in that, like, especially going to the next gen, both of the companies have essentially announced the base specs for the next machine, and they are strikingly similar. There's not going to be much to separate them from a pure hardware sort of perspective.
Well,
so
the thing is
these services
the thing
that will.
The only thing that ever separates one console from the next is the library. The hardware doesn't matter whatsoever. Look at the Atari Jaguar, which, to be fair, actually was... It was an excellent console, but didn't have the software support. And Sony obviously know this, have been in the game long enough. They don't want people just say, well, you've got a choice between two consoles. You can get one that's from us or one that's from them.
Mm-hmm.
Stick with us for brand loyalty. You have to give people an actual purpose to choose Sony over Microsoft, especially since the opposite will happen, that people who've had Xbox all along will go with that.
Yeah.
The next generation comes around. But they won't if they can't get the games that they played on the previous console.
I think what might happen is people will be getting a PC and Steam for their indies and then getting a PS5 for their big hitters. Like, that's probably what will happen.
Well, it's funny you should mention this, Rich, because obviously, in contrast to Sony, Microsoft have kind of made a name for themselves, like you say, like embracing the indie scene. But now they just seem to be buying up all the most beloved kind of indie publishers ever. They recently, at E3 this year, they announced that they had purchased Double Fine.
Yep.
They announced last year they'd picked up Ninja Theory and Obsidian and a bunch of others. Like, the studios they're buying are these beloved kind of like indie darlings who make indie games, and I don't know whether that's going to change now that they're owned by a big sort of like corporation. Will their ethos and the things that drew fans to them in the first place like change? I don't know.
I don't think it will, since Microsoft is the first party operator. They're not as beholden to the same criteria as the likes of EA or Activision. They're not generally judged on the profits of the first party games either. And also, we saw with the example of like Cuphead, Studio MDHR was heavily invested. Well, it was mostly backed by Microsoft themselves, and they had complete free rein to go ahead and do a game that simply couldn't have existed without it. So, yeah, I think this is just an ongoing trend in the industry of developers making a name for themselves and then being signed up, as it were, like a band. I don't think it's anything to worry about when it comes to Microsoft.
Right.
But
I hope so.
Yeah, when it happens with other developers, it might be a little more unnerving. I know Campo de Santo made the excellent Firewatch, have recently been bought by Valve.
Mm-hmm.
I think Valve are the sort of company that would allow them to do what they want and understand what makes their games successful and popular. But if it comes to an EA who might simply want the talent from the studio, not so much the ideas, then we might have a different situation.
Well, it's funny you should mention it. We'll get to them in a bit, but like when it comes to like Microsoft, obviously, I think their biggest games over the generation so far, their big AAA exclusives have kind of not totally failed, but they've sort of landed with not much fanfare. We've had like Halo 5, Gears 4, and then a bunch like Crackdown 3, which did absolutely nothing. The focus hasn't been on those games. It's been on games like you said, Cuphead, Ori, even like State of Decay. Those have been the games that have been sort of propping up Xbox, at least for me, at least when it comes to like the big conferences. Those are the like center focus, like the focuses of those big presentations.
I'd say Sea of Thieves is making a wee bit of a comeback recently, but that's been like the only one that I've seen recently, totally, yeah.
Well, it's like, I don't know, what, like, when you guys look for, like, these consoles, like you said, Rich, like, you might just get to a point where you're going to PC for your indies because they have such a good, like, sort of...
Personally.
yeah, like an early access, like, sort of, practice? System? An early access system, I'm going to go with that.
Ooh, dangerous that, though, early access, that's a whole other wormhole,
well,
isn't
that's it, but that's kind of, like, what, like, Microsoft are also embracing. I think it's, like, I don't know, it's interesting that they are really opening up their console, like, said, but Sony is being so insular about theirs. I think that's very old money in a way. It's like having your console be this island that you have to make people jump through hoops to sort of get their games on it.
Yeah, it echoes the Nintendo practices of the mid-80s and late 80s, which worked for a period when they had a complete monopoly on the market, but eventually made third-party businesses look elsewhere and led to the defections of companies like Konami and Square and even Capcom going to Sony. When the PlayStation came out, so I think, yeah, it's difficult to sell the idea to developers that you can only release your games on this console without a huge financial incentive. And I guess that's what's going on here.
Yeah, definitely, I think so. And I think I just like the idea of having your console or the image of your brand tied to indies, I think brings a lot of goodwill. You mentioned EA there, and they have their EA Originals program, which like creates games like Unraveled or A Way Out and stuff. And those are in sort of direct contrast to your big Anthems or your Mass Effects or your FIFAs, which bring a lot of ridicule and criticism and controversy to your brand. Whereas just by throwing out, almost like throwing like the people a bone, like here you go, he's Unravel, he's a cute like indie game that we won't make any money off, but look, it's wholesome and good and we do care about the art or whatever. I think there's a view that indie games especially are sort of art in a way that big budget blockbuster games aren't necessarily perceived to be, which I think is kind of like troubling, especially when you see a big publisher embracing that mentality of being, okay, this is art, this is disposable money making stuff, but we're gonna pretend it's not, even though our messaging kind of contradicts that.
Oh man.
Go on, Reg, what do you think?
It's I mean, you're not wrong. It's a shame. I'm just trying to think, like, why do I love indie games? Like, what is it about indie games that are appealing to me? It's because I don't always want to play a big, massive, impressive game. I want to play a small, charming game from time to time. Maybe I only have like a tenner this month that I want to like spend on a Wii game. And I'm just thinking, if the PS5 does end up being like all its eggs in the one basket, that's like, ooh, that's really sort of narrowing
audience. Think over the past decade or so, I think we've seen like the gaming industry and the types of games they produce really narrow. You have your big budget AAA games and you have your indies, but that space in the middle, what THQ or someone like that used to occupy, is eroded.
There's no middle market anymore for an average, what I'd consider a shelf filling game.
Yeah.
Seems a little dismissive, but ones that eventually even come down in price, which is something games don't do. Yeah, you're either one or the other. You're either a big budget or you're an indie.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a place for it, and I don't know where it's going to come.
Yeah, definitely. I think even that, the idea of there just being this binary system sort of muddies the waters as well, because you do get like these big indie games funded by big publishers that are pitched as being indie, but if you, I don't know, do they embody the ethos or like the...
I mean, I suggested Journey. Journey, yes. In my head, I go, oh, it's an indie game. No, Sony published Journey. And I'm like, but it is the like epitome of an indie game. But it's not.
But it's not.
It's so not.
It's such a vague definition. I think indie games, it's much as an ethical thing than it is an actual like fundamental business thing. It's about usually small teams with complete freedom of the ideas, and even if they are being funded by a third party, as long as they retain that freedom, I think you could still consider an independent game. It's like, it's literally what it means.
They are
independent to do what they like.
Heck yeah, independence.
When it comes to like those relationships with the big publishers, that can like that expectation of something as either indie or it's a big budget game, I think, can damage those smaller scale games. Like No Man's Sky, there was an interview with Sean Murray recently where they thought, a team of like seven people thought they were just making this like small indie game, which is what No Man's Sky was. But when you get in bed with a publisher like Sony, who's throwing all this money behind the marketing stuff, there's a level of expectation that comes with the audience. And you expect it to be this hugely detailed, hugely expansive, big budget game that you can sink your teeth into because of the way it's been shifted and marketed, and it doesn't have the markers of what we as consumers associate with indie games. When we look at indie games, at least me personally, I look at colorful, sprightly 2D platformers or something like that. I don't look at No Man's Sky necessarily because I don't think the industry is sort of marketed like indies like that anymore, because that space in the middle is eroded.
It's bizarre to think that that is an indie game, is it?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, really.
I think you've hit it there. It's on how it was marketed. It was so like heavily marketed as this massive game. I never thought of it as an indie game.
I think
game.
That's one of the big distinctions, is that a lot of indie games don't have much in the way of marketing budget whatsoever anyway. Mm. They usually rely on word of mouth and goodwill, which is what makes No Man's Sky such an exception.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But as you say, it still is an independent game, which suddenly, because it's got the marketing drive, has those expectations. I think sometimes it can work in reverse as well, where indie games arrive with very few expectations, and
yes.
Sometimes
I love that
it's good, but sometimes it can be dismissed or it can be undermined by their own place. Like, there's indie games out there that are as good or as innovative as AAA titles that don't necessarily get the same degree of respect.
They just need someone to find them and then tell their friends, yeah, and then put it on YouTube. There's like the thing with indies is you could say like, oh, obviously you need a lot of confidence, a lot of like business security to make a AAA game these days, but think about the guys who are making indie games. Like, what they want to be creative and make this like game that's perfect for them, but they are actually dropping it in the ocean.
Yeah,
there are so many indie games. You mentioned Nintendo, which is like, the Switch is great, it's got like every indie under the bloody sun on it at the minute. A lot of garbage as well. So I imagine people who are, you know, making indie games, and then in turn people who are investing in indie games, it's kind of like, I say, like a needle in a haystack these days.
Exactly.
As well,
especially when it comes to sort of, well, what was Steam Greenlight or something, there are thousands of games being uploaded to that as like a marketplace every single day, and to get yours noticed, it's just difficult, and to like prove that you're worth buying, like you are of higher quality than these other games, it just sort of doesn't exist.
Yeah, this goes back to the issue you mentioned before about the lack of the central pillar in the games market, where a lot of these games in the past are quite similar or even as good as games that were released in 20 years ago, 25 years ago, which would have hit the stores, mm-hmm, and these would have had shelf space, and they would have been noticed, and they would have been sold, and they would have been considered what we today would consider AAA games. But when you're competing with thousands of them, you get very easily get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know what the solution to that is, really.
Nor do I. I just know that personally, when I see a sort of indie game, if it doesn't have, and this is entirely on me, but I think it might be indicative of like wider players at large, is that if I don't see someone, a game attached to like a Microsoft or a big publisher, I'm less willing to give it a try, even if it is sort of cheaper. I don't know whether that's just me, because there's a level of expectation.
I sort of feel the opposite.
Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Like if I see a game's being marketed as an exclusive, or as you say, it's tied to a big publisher, I assume it's being designed with mass market appeal in mind and not necessarily something that will interest me.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I obviously don't dismiss it not turn course, like yeah. that, but it's just like it's a little check against it before going to it.
It's a shame that
you're such a hipster, Benji.
not, I know. It's...
Yeah, Ben, what was the last AAA game you played? Put
That's
you on the spot
a
now.
Good question. Probably Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Oh yeah, okay.
So Nintendo, I have a different attitude towards.
I think it's exactly what you mentioned there. There is no sort of middle ground. Like for me, it's either these self-published games or these companies I don't know much about, or it's like the big publishers. There's no sort of like middle tier distributor or publisher known for specializing in indie games, at least not one that sort of hit the mainstream. Like we were talking before we came in about Annapurna Interactive. They've like distributed games like What Remains of Edith Finch, Flower Gone Home on the Switch, the upcoming 12 Minutes, The Outer Wilds.
Gorogoa. Again, not many people have played.
Is that good? I've not even heard of that.
Really, really, very pretentious.
Right, like they said from like their other games, like everything you just listed there is absolutely stellar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like, I think they're starting to make a name for themselves, and they're doing it
as an independent publisher. Which is really, it's a new. So I say a new thing, but it's not in the sense that we used to have publishers take on board lesser projects
strange,
in the past.
Strange these days. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like the fact that they were known, I think the movie industry, just to segue a little bit, is much better at dealing with sort of like independent movies and distributing them and like giving them a space where people know about them and have the option to sort of like seek them out in a way that the gaming industry doesn't.
Well, the gaming industry doesn't necessarily mirror the movie industry, even though we use the same term. So movie industry started with its major studios, your Paramount, your Columbia, your TriStar. And then it was the movies that existed outside the studio system that became known as independent. And that was very, very much understood. But when gaming began, pretty much everyone was an independent studio because games didn't have budgets. You had them being developed by one, two people, sometimes for Naut. There were, you know, there was no industry leader than Atari and some of the early arcade pioneers like Namco and Konami. But over time, we developed this sort of cartel of the big companies that we have today once, you know, experienced financial difficulties in studios because there's a lot of churn in the industry and that happened. And it suddenly became more financially viable to be bought out by your EAs and your Activisions and to get in bed with Sony and Microsoft, which is how we end up with the situation we have now, which is why when we get games that aren't developed outside those, we consider them independent games.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually just going back to what we used to have more than it being a brand new sphere.
It's interesting what you say about like the end goal of it sort of is now to be bought out by that big publisher. Like we saw with Microsoft and Obsidian they've been making good games that the fans have loved and have sold pretty well.
Being bought by a big company doesn't necessarily mean selling out.
Yeah.
It is possible to... It can just mean security, and it can mean you can continue to make games that people want. without the fear of losing your job, without the fear of going bankrupt. Which is why I understand Double Fine getting in bed with Microsoft. I understand Campo DeSanto going in with them. All I know is reading about Campo DeSanto. I don't know if you know anything about the Playmate.
No.
The little gizmo that they've designed with the crank.
Okay.
Oh, that thing.
Yeah, basically, I was reading, I can't remember the name of a fellow who runs it, but he was saying, like, the way they developed that is that they'd look at the bank account
right
month to month, see if they had any money in it, and if they did, they'd inject the funds into that little project, which is not necessarily a very viable way to operate as a business.
Definitely not.
So if you can get the backing of Valve and still be allowed to work on those passion projects, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But obviously, the problem is, as we mentioned, if you get bought out and then you get liquidated and can no longer.
Well, that's exactly what you said. Like, video game development, even when you are a big studio and a big developer, is like so risky and it's so, I don't know, high risk that I couldn't even imagine being actually independent, not just making independently like themed games, like being actually independent, putting your own time and money into it. And then, because it takes so long, there are very few of you actually working on it, and you need to, there is a level of expectation in the audience that it needs to be of a certain length or of a certain quality or have certain mechanics that I just don't think is potentially realistic, at least not with the infrastructure that is in place right now. I don't know.
Well, I guess that's why we don't get these type of games being released like in the shops and like with like widespread like we used to, simply because they can't match the expectation that has been built that previously didn't exist.
Yeah.
It used to be perfectly fine to have 10, 12-hour games. That was, in fact, even less than that. That was the norm. But once we started getting the huge 80-hour open world ones. You can't then release a game like Gorico. I mentioned it takes about 70 minutes to complete.
Yeah.
You can't release that for 20 quid and not wind people up. So
that's the sort of, at least when I'm talking to my friends, that's the reservation I know a lot of people have, is like, how much is a game sort of worth time-wise? Like, if you only play something for 70 minutes and yet have a really good time, is that still worth £20? I think even when we talk about great games, we talk about great indie games, we talk about them, but then we have to sort of add a little addendum of, oh, actually though, it's only an hour and a half, so maybe wait till it goes down in price.
Yeah, it's because you have these big massive AAA games, like for example God of War, I ended up getting for £30 in a sale, and it's like, look at that, who's like 100 hours long to like £30. I spent £26 on Cadence of Hyrule, which was stellar, but I completed it in 5 hours. So which one was more worth the money?
It's a great question, and it's not a question I was asking in 1992 when I completed Sonic 2 in 50 minutes, you know, because that was how it was.
Because I mean, like, the big games now are not only made to be like these huge 100-hour experiences, but to last years as well. Like, there are live services that will keep being updated with oftentimes free content, and that's just will eat itself eventually, but is also no good for the indies. Anyway, a more nicer note, which indies are you guys looking forward to in the coming year? Because there was a lot of them announced at E3, especially, as we've mentioned, on Microsoft's stage. I'm really looking forward to that 12 Minutes by Annapurna.
Yeah.
I think that's such a great concept, and even though it's sort of, it was not even like built necessarily as a game, it's sort of like an interactive kind of experience more than anything else. But I love that there's space for that now. What are you guys looking forward to?
I think we'll go with Benji.
Come on, Benji.
we mentioned Double Fine earlier, Psychonauts 2.
Delicious.
It has to be considered an independent still. It's weird. It's a weird game, Psychonauts, because the actual game itself was, even at the time, it was a bit ropey.
Right.
But it was, like, it had such a great plot, such great writing, such a great concept that it became a cult classic, and it was just thoroughly enjoyable. I do worry that people are going to forget that the platforming in the first game wasn't great to begin with.
Okay.
So we shouldn't necessarily expect it to be this time. I actually think it'll be better.
Have you been following Double Fine a lot recently? How have they been faring since they sort of...
I can't say I have.
Okay.
It's been a while since they released a game that really intrigued me. But, I mean, they've been doing all right.
Yeah, okay.
They've been doing a lot of that in the last few years, which has really pleased me. Remasters of LucasArts classic games have got the rights to Dave the Tentacle and Grim Fandango. Full Throttle.
Yeah,
so,
I was going to say that, Full Throttle.
Check them out if you haven't.
Honestly, I remember like going back to Grim Fandango, because I never played it when I was younger, obviously, and it was so obtuse and confusing, and I thought, you know what, this is good conceptually, but also I'm not skilled enough. I don't have the muscle memory or the knowledge to tackle a game like this. This is passed me by.
Those games are just designed for like walkthroughs, like online, like honestly, I don't know.
But you see, this is what we were saying, like if you know exactly what to do in those games, you finish them in an evening.
Right.
And then it's gone, so you're supposed to be stuck on it.
Yeah.
You used to get stuck on games. That was the idea.
Yeah.
And you used to spend, and that was where the value came. I suppose maybe the internet to some extent has made it so that you can no longer release a game like that anymore, which means you either have to have massive difficulty or massive length.
Rich?
There's a few. I had a wee look around because my brain did a little blank. So there's a few coming that I'm like really excited for. There was one that premiered last year, or maybe the year before actually, Microsoft's little indie showcase, and it's called The Last Night.
Tell me more. I think I remember this one.
Really bright neon colors, almost like pixelated style, and it just looks bonkers. And I'm sure it was, I think it was 17 that it was showcased, and it's still not out yet. So I'm interested to see more on that, maybe eventually.
I think a lot of these games, especially the ones we've seen this year, sort of like A Plague's Tale has been getting a lot of buzz. I think compared to the AAA games that have been out this year have been just so stagnant when it comes to their design.
Before we came on this pod, I was wondering what AAA games have really stood out this year. And I think the one for me, the only one, is Sekiro.
Yes. I was going
to
say Sekiro.
Yeah, like the other ones that everyone has been talking about, we've had Resident Evil 2. Fair enough, it's great.
Remake,
yeah, exactly. We had that month where there was about 10 different versions of Anthem.
Yeah.
All with different names.
it was Anthem, Far Cry, Metro Exodus.
That's right, yeah. In fact, I think that was the context of the last time we did a
podcast on indie games.
Other than that, my brain draws a blank. Mario Maker 2, I guess.
Yeah.
Again, it's a sequel. So what's really, as great as it is, it's actually outsold the original already.
Really?
Yeah, nice. By double.
More people own a Switch than do own a Wii U, though.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking, like, what's inspiring me here for these big budget games? And the answer is none.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few coming later in the year, Nintendo games, but so far, nothing.
Yeah.
Interesting point on indie games I'm looking forward to. It's actually one thing that now independent games have been around for a while is that certain people within that sphere have made names for themselves such that they can actually sell the next game on the basis of it.
Yeah.
So we had The Witness, which for big appeal is Jonathan Blow.
Mm-hmm.
Like the godfather of independent games, if you want to call him that. But like one of the games I'm looking forward to is Telling Lies, which is not a sequel, but a follow-up to Sam Barlow's Her Story.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you haven't played Her Story, it's basically it's sort of like a police procedural where you just watch, you search like a database for videos, and you in your own head piece together the story of this murder, and it's got no like explicit objective, no like do this, check this, what's this. Doesn't ask you any questions. You just put the story together in your head. It's a truly immersive game. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he evolves that concept. It looks quite similar so far. It's got a couple of apparently famous names. I don't know who they are. Logan Marshall Green. Does that name mean anything to you?
I like Logan Marshall Green.
Prometheus.
He was in Upgrade as well, I think.
And Angela Serafian.
I don't know who that is.
Might have been in Westworld.
Okay.
So yeah, that's going to be good.
I'm excited for that. Because for me, like the AAA, I don't know about you, Rich. Like apart from maybe Sekiro, and even though I love Resident Evil 2, the games I played this year, they've just kind of been devoid of ideas. Like, I put on Days Gone, and I really enjoyed Days Gone. I played it for 40 hours or whatever. And it was a good sort of, like, experience just to go in and, like, do the same thing over and over again. It was mechanically enjoyable, but I've gravitated much more to something like The Sinking City. And I'm really looking forward to A Plague Tale, because I feel like the ideas, even though they might be ropier games and not as mechanically tight, they just have something to them in a way that AAA games this year don't. Like, they just seem devoid of any, like, kind of... No, I'm not going to say passion, but, like, ideas especially. Like, the mechanics are good, the world is good, it's immaculately designed, but what's actually the draw here other than the pleasure of shooting some aliens in the face in a really satisfying way?
I think that's because a lot of AAA games are, like, they're making money these days, so a lot of the, you know, creativity gets lost along the way of, like, we need to actually sell this game. My top games this year, they've been remakes, and I've been playing loads of ports on the Switch and stuff like that, and MMOs as always. So, like, apart from Sekiro, obviously Kingdom Hearts 3 blew me away. But again, it's like, well, they were doing new things, but it's still Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
I want to wrap this up by just saying, like, it's funny that you should say about Nintendo being, like, the home of, like, indies, like, this generation, they have everything on it. Mm. When I'm buying a game, like, I bought A Night in the Woods, and I bought Celeste as well, even though it was more, I think it was in the sale on PSN. and yet I paid a bit extra to play it on the Nintendo Switch because it feels, I don't know, like it feels more better designed like to accommodate. Like,
I think it feels more harmonious with the Switch.
That's exactly
seems
the thing.
Seems to match its philosophy.
Yeah.
One game I was going to mention, by the way, just to interest you. You're a big fan of Firewatch.
Yes, I am.
Follow-up to that from Kamui Tezuka, it's called In the Valley of the Gods, which looks very similar, like in the way, not narratively, but in the way it plays. And again, I'm interested in that, not without even knowing anything about the game. Because of Firewatch, yeah. I just think, oh, it's that Egypt game.
Yeah.
That looks good, but... And that's really interesting. That's really good for that yeah. develops.
There's also a sequel to Oxenfree coming called After Party as well.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I think like in the indie space, it's like these developers and these names like Jonathan Blow have like you want to follow them in a way that although you might follow the likes of BioWare in like the gaming industry, they're so nebulous when it comes to like their team and like their creatives. Like I couldn't tell you who's the current creative lead on like Anthem in a way that I could like the guys from like Campo Santo who went to join those. I think you are more willing to follow them in lieu of having like these big distributors to follow you. Want to follow individual teams.
I actually think it was the personality of Corey Balog, which is why God of War appealed to so many people, and some people wanted to see it be successful.
But, like, how rare was that when Corey Balog was looking at the reviews afterwards, and then he was, like, sort of tearing up?
And yeah, like, that was beautiful.
Never, ever see that in the big corporate world of AAA that isn't just a press release that was written by 20 people and like sent out and just devoid of all human emotion.
So that's what it is. AAA games need more heart. They need more emotion.
They do.
That's Nintendo have that as well. And you get it in the press conference. You get it. People loved the personality. You know, we loved Reggie. We loved Satoru Iwata. God bless him. And like in the way that we don't necessarily do with the other studios you mentioned. And I guess that's why Nintendo, for all, they're not that much different in terms of a third first party philosophy. Just seems more like, what's the word, like we empathize with it more.
Definitely, sure. I fully agree with that. I don't know what you guys think down in the comments below. Do you think that indie games are indeed the future, and which are you looking forward to over the next year or so, I guess?
Yeah.
And while you're there, could you give us a like, share, subscribe, and head over to whatculture.com for more list news like this every single day. We'll have another podcast to you on Wednesday and Friday with Rachel Shackleton and a bunch of the other guys. Come on.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. No spoilers, I'm just saying. You might be in it. Even if you don't, though, I've been Josh, joined as ever by the birthday boy, Benjamin Richardson, and Rachel Shackleton. Hope you've had a good time, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.